Pokemon Go?
I think so. But if we're not, then we'll have to do the whole pod over again.
No, we won't. All right. Well, it's been a while, Shamik. Well, let me just do a quick intro. This is Inside the Cylinder. We are back post-holidays, so thanks for sticking with us. We kind of had a little bit of delay. No Joey Mack today, but you're joined, as always, by me, David Fernandez, host and writer at DetroitBadBoys.com. All of our new episodes can be found on DetroitBadBoys.com. And I'm joined by one of Detroit Bad Boys' newest writers, not necessarily new anymore, first time on the show on Inside the Cylinder as a member of Detroit Bad Boys, Shamik Mohile. What's up, Shamik?
How's it going? Actually, I think each time I've come on the show, I've been with a different publication, which is funny.
It has been that way. Yeah. It was Piss and Power to start.
Did my own thing.
And then you did your own thing. I think we both were on like that. What was that?
Motor City Maine.
16 wins a ring 16, for a second.
Oh, man. Man. And that was, I mean, it's been like,
that was like 2 years ago.
It seems like it's been so long, but it really hasn't been that long.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's a blast in the past right there.
And I haven't been on a pod with Joey Mack since like my first time coming out with you guys.
Damn.
It's been years.
That's on Joey.
Yeah, it's certainly not on me, so I don't know.
Definitely not. But thank you for joining us today, or joining me today. And yeah, as I said, this is like our first episode of the new year, just to kind of set the stage of where everything stands with the Pistons right now. They're currently sitting at 14-24. They recently wrapped up a 6-game road trip. They went 2-4 on that trip. This isn't going to be too much about like the games and the gameplay and all that type of stuff. This episode's a little bit more about some larger topics at hand. And I think more important topics, honestly. But also, you know, just in the sense of setting that stage even further, the Pistons are currently 4 games behind the 7-seeded Magic, 3 games back of the Nets for the 8th seed. And in their next 18 games, 14 of those games are against teams with losing records. So let me ask you, Shamik, with all of that being said, with how close they are into like the playoff race, even with how bad that they've looked throughout this time and with their upcoming schedule against such poor teams, do you think does a fan in you tell you to like go for it and try to make the playoffs, or are you just like, hey, you know, we've gone down that road enough, let's just, you know, hit the rebuild button?
I'm of the opinion that they got to start hitting the rebuild button like sooner rather than later. I think this year presents like a very unique opportunity where, you know, Andre Drummond is in trade talks and you can actually get something of value back for him. Blake is a lost cause. Possibly next year he'll come back decent. And we're starting to see like more of like a youth movement. Like Sekou is, you know, he's winning the hearts of fans right now. So why not, you know, lean into that and continue down that path as opposed to kind of pushing him to the side in favor of Blake and, you know, whoever else they can get to scrounge together either a 7 or 8 seed. It's possible they get a 7 or 8 seed if they try and get it, but what is really the outcome of that? They're going to get whooped by the Bucks again, or, you know, possibly win a game but then lose a series against the Heat. I don't know. I'm of the opinion they should just start to rebuild, you know, despite the, you know, favorable schedule coming up.
And one thing that's kind of makes everything tricky with even like the schedule where they currently stand right now, the Pistons are 14-24, which is terrible, like much worse than what we all expected them to be. But there's a lot of bad teams in both like the Western Conference and Eastern Conference. I think people were expecting the Western Conference to be a little bit more competitive, not as many teams, you know, sitting there with like 10 games under 500. The East has a bunch of teams that are still, you know, in the doldrums. So even with where they're currently at right now, they're still going to be slated at like, you know, 8 to 14 or something like that. They're not even going to be able to sort of bottom out 100%. Although if they do trade Andre Drummond, who knows? You know, that could definitely change things. But that's just one thing that I've noticed. I was like kind of looking through, you know, the standings, and I was kind of, and I was hoping that they were even a little bit further down, that they'd actually be projected to have a better pick than what they're currently at right now.
Yeah, like they're like, I mean, like you said, they're four games behind the seven seeded Magic, but they're also four games away from being like the 14th seed. You know, so it's at this point, like with how close, how bad, like with how close the bad teams are in the East, why not just be one of those bad teams? Or if you're gonna go and do this youth movement, maybe these like maybe Sekou like figures it out, like very like, you know, off chance, but maybe like he and Bruce and Luke like make the team fun to watch, but they get an 8 seed. I'd rather them get a 7 or 8 seed like that than with pushing all their chips in and just barely getting the 8 seed. I would hate to watch another Blake-led team lose to the Bucks in 4.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And speaking of Blake Griffin, he recently had surgery on his left knee. He's out indefinitely, but the news from, you know, from just the general beat writers kind of sentiment around Detroit is that it's pretty doubtful that he's going to return this year. And I know personally from having a similar surgery where they kind of clean out, you know, loose cartilage and whatever have you have going on there. Yeah. It's about a 6 to 8 week timetable for a return. But Shamik, I guess if you, and you're the resident, you know, medical expert, yeah, you're the Dr. Oz of Pistons Twitter. but maybe a little bit more qualified than Dr. Oz. But what are your thoughts on the whole Blake Griffin injury scenario right now?
Well, like you said, like the surgery he got was more or less just to clean up like the loose debris, like the cartilage, the bone, you know, some scar tissues, what else, like, you know, whatever else is in there from, you know, the either the previous surgery or like, as you know, as the season progressed, any damage he's done since then. It's about like a 2 to 3 month recovery, which kind of puts him at like what, like March. So
yeah, I would say about March, April-ish.
But I think the key, like it with Blake, is because you're kind of banking on him, or at least the Pistons are banking on him to be like productive for two reasons. One, so that they can trade him, or two, so that he can actually be something of value for the gigantic contract he has. Like the last thing they would want is some albatross contract with a guy that can't play, right? That would be like the worst thing. So I think more or less he's done for the season. I think you can just write it off. He'll begin his off season, you know, rehab and workouts and stuff as soon as he's healthy from his surgery. And then that's that. We won't see him till October. I think that's probably the best course of action for the Pistons. And I think that's what they'll do. But I really would hate to see them rush him back like they did last year. And we see him like have like essentially like a bionic knee in the playoffs. I mean, it was very heartwarming to see him like try really hard to win even one game for the Pistons, but it's probably not in his best interest. And in all likelihood, that's probably what led to this situation he's in now, was kind of pushing it back then.
Yeah. And even though it was, you know, it heartwarming and in it, you know, you could sort of support his, you know, his bravery to get back out there on the floor every single time. And I'm thinking back to like when he first got back to back in the playoffs against the Bucks. I remember he went for a dunk in the first game, and then he also like dived on the floor. And half of that was just like stomach churning just to watch all that happen. Just because, as you mentioned, he did have like a bionic knee, and it's like, oh my God, like I don't even want to see what's about to happen or how he's about to sort of react to whatever sort of play that he just made, just because you knew in your heart of hearts that he should not be out there at that time.
I mean, we all saw this like gigantic cast wrap, God knows what it was, around his knee, and he's, I mean, he could barely bend it, and it's great to see. It embodies the spirit of Detroit and like what it means to like be a blue collar worker and work hard and try your best always. But at a certain point, you have to kind of put away your moral victories and like be realistic. And I think that's kind of where the Pistons are should go. But I think if the Pistons are really within striking distance of playoffs in March, I think they probably will bring him back, which is a poor decision, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we're actually going to have to monitor, especially seeing how these next, you know, 15 to 20 games right. go. One thing that you can take solace in, especially if Detroit does shut down Blake for the rest of the year, Blake had his best season of his career and his best season in Detroit, which was last season, and that was the first year that he had a full summer where he wasn't strictly rehabbing. Yep. So if Blake can actually just rehab, you know, during the winter time, during, you know, the early spring, and then have a full healthy summer before he comes into next season, then you might see next year, you know, it might be one of these sort of soft rebuilds where Detroit winds up with a pretty nice pick, and they also have a healthy Blake returning, and, you know, guys that they can sort of hang their hat on, and mm-hmm. Siku and Luke, and you actually have a pretty respectable team next year rather than just kind of risking everything for, as you said, Shamik, another ass kicking by the Milwaukee Bucks.
And it's actually funny because, like, the Warriors are going through that, like, right now. Like, the Warriors are finding people like Eric Paschal and whoever they get with this great draft pick they're going to get this year. To kind of build and put around, like, the Steph, who's been pretty much gone for the season, and Clay, who has been gone for the season, with Draymond. Like, they are, like, having a one bad rebuilding year to then potentially be, like, a top five seed next year. It's wild.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that's, you know, Detroit could be the sort of light, extremely light version exactly. of that.
Go ahead. Just one more thing, like, I think one thing to kind of be optimistic about with Blake is that, I don't know about you, but Blake is, like, the one player that I vividly remember, like, changing his game to fit his injury or athletic limitations. When he first came to the league, he was dunking on everybody, putting things back, you know, like, just being a totally different player than what he is today. Today, he's more savvy. Like, I would say he's more like Jokic than he is, like, you know, than a guy who just dunks.
Prime
yeah, like Prime Blake. Yeah, yeah. And that makes you optimistic about, like, okay, if he has a full summer of rehab and rest and whatever, and he comes back healthy, maybe he's not as athletic, but maybe he's a better shooter. Maybe he's a better point forward than what he was last year. Maybe he's finding ways to be effective while he's on the court. And I think that's an optimistic thing versus, like, if you look at, like, John Wall. Like, John Wall has a torn Achilles. I really don't know if you'll ever get the same John Wall, and I don't know if he's going to change his game to be even semi-productive anymore. Blake still is, and he had his best season of his career without being able to really dunk.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I mean, even watching last year, Blake, it did remind me of, in a much different sense, but that's what Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant did.
Yeah.
Like, they changed their game. They kind of, you know, shifted more to, like, a back to the basket. You know, they understood, you know, they put elements into their game, like a mid-range post, where that wasn't what they were relying on when they were younger in their career. And obviously Blake wasn't necessarily relying on that play type himself, but he was making changes, working on his three-point shot, making sure that he was still going to be relevant and effective. And he was an All-NBA player last year. He made the third-team All-NBA.
Right.
So, that should give you solace as well, and I completely agree. But I did want to mention, and you had mentioned it a little bit earlier, with Blake being gone, at least now, that has allowed for Sekou Doumbouya, the Pistons rookie, to not only play, but he's entered the starting lineup. He's started four games so far this season. He's averaging 13 points, 7 boards, 1.5 steals, and he's shooting 48% from the field and 31% from three, which is not that bad, all things considered. I mean, the 31% from three, everything else has been outstanding. Shamik, what are your thoughts on the rookie so far?
I know when some people, like, have these, like, breakout random rookies, they're like, you know, oh, it might be, like, just 1 year. You know, I'm not really sure if he can maintain this production. How much better can he get? Throw it all out the window. I think people should be selling the farm, like, just putting all the money in their Sekou bank. I think that dude is going to be a fucking star. Oh, sorry. I'm not making a star. But
no, you can swear. I don't care.
That dude is going to be awesome. Like, when he fell to the Pistons at 15, I was like, okay, well, yeah, everything is lining up for him to be, like, a good player. Former pro, check. youngest player in the draft, check. International player, check. Plays against international competition, check. Sean Sweeney, who developed Giannis on the Pistons coaching staff, check. Dwayne Casey developed Pascal Siakam from some random international player, check. Sekou has everything lined up perfectly for him to be a star in this league and to take this franchise from irrelevance to something. What that something is, I don't know. But to take it from what it is today and be the face of this franchise, and I think we're seeing like just the surface of what he is capable of. And I think people should be very excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he definitely has a lot going for him. I was going to ask you if it's like, should Pistons fandom, especially following that gnarly dunk he had on Tristan Thompson earlier this week. I was wondering if you were part of the camp, like, okay, everyone, let's just calm down a little
I'm
bit.
I'm the opposite.
It's been a good, okay, put the money
put,
in the bank.
Put the money then. In the bank. Let's say this. If Sekou, and like remember this like 10 years from now, if Sekou is not at least an all-NBA player in the next 5 to 7 years, I will eat this entire show sheet.
That's a big sheet.
It's like 3 pages long.
One thing that's good about that's been surprising, and one of the sort of, I guess, negatives that you heard about Sekou, and it wasn't necessarily about Sekou as it was as much about his age with the Pistons, was, you know, okay, the Pistons, you know, you kind of have a weird timeline. We don't necessarily know what you want to do. But you're going to get a player who's not going to be ready to play. He's not going to see any minutes his rookie year. By the time that he's actually going to start producing and becoming a player that you want him to be, it's going to be essentially that part of his sort of tenure in the NBA where he can leave the Detroit Pistons and go elsewhere. Seeing him being able to hop on the floor, and now there's plenty of areas in his game, like, you know, getting the fouls under control, understanding where he's supposed to be on defense.
But he's 19.
You know, he's 19, exactly. You know, having an understanding of, you know, I mean, finding his shot, you know, not necessarily just in transition, but finding his shot, his jumper, where he's not just strictly wide open. You know, those are going to be elements of his game that he can refine over these next few years. But this has been as good as a start as you can ask for from Sekou. He's not going to go back down to the G League. I mean, he might be in the starting lineup for the rest of this season, and I wouldn't blame him.
He should be.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, and that's been one of the sort of, like, I don't know, just hidden, not necessarily hidden, but just a positive with how negative that this season has been going so far.
Absolutely, and I think this is like the first draft pick that people are like Luke Kennard, people liked Andre Drummond, but this is the first draft pick I think in the past decade that people have like genuinely been like very excited about.
I mean, with the position that he plays, which is, I mean, pretty much a four right now, four. But yeah. Possibly can become like a 3-4, maybe a small ball five, depending on the types of lineups that you want to roll out there. He is gigantic. Like, he runs the floor like a gazelle, and he dunks it with ease. Like, he is definitely the, I mean, Andre Drummond's a pretty goddamn good athlete. Yeah. But, I mean, Andre Drummond and Sekou are the two best athletes on that team by far. Sekou is just a freak when it comes to just his sort of natural capabilities.
And he's already okay, this is like a broken record, but he's only 19. Like, he's what, like 6'9 right now? When Giannis came in the league, he was skinny and 6'9. When Sekou comes in the league, he's a little bit heavier, maybe like, what, 220 or something, 230, and he's 6'9. There's one, a chance for him to get taller. That's always in the cards for people who are 19 coming in the league. And a chance to get an NBA strength and conditioning offseason under his belt this summer. I think that's huge.
Yeah, and I agree. And some of the parts of his game that have been nice to see, he does have an understanding of, you know, lapses in the defense that he can take advantage of. You know, you've seen him against LeBron. You saw it against Draymond Green. Baseline cut, jam.
Yep.
Like, that's just something where he's not standing around. He's not waiting for the ball to possibly get you know, kicked him out in the wing. Greg Kessler pointed out in the Cavs game, you know, he just sort of floated his way into the paint. And a few, I think he's done it in, you know, three or four of his starts so far, and found himself with an easy little bunny. And then also, you know, the transition game just looks seamless for him. You know, he doesn't rush layups. He doesn't panic when he's up at the rim. I mean, it's not hard for him to get up to the rim. Finishing with the jam seems pretty easy. So a lot of these things that are just, you know, part of it is just like that natural skill set, but also part of it's an understanding of how to play actual basketball and not just, you know, just being an athletic freak out there. So I think that that's definitely something that's good and something that you can hopefully see him begin to develop even further as the season progresses.
And that point you just made is a product of him being a professional already. He's been a professional for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And these things, like an international competition, like we saw with Luka, like the league kind of was like against Luka. Oh, he dominated, but it was against international competition. Will he do the same thing in this league? Yes. The answer should have always been yes, and he's doing it now. It's the same thing. Like, those are grown men out there playing basketball. Like, people who have been playing basketball their entire lives. And Sekou is dominating that league. And he comes over here and he's playing like a pro. He's not playing like a college. Like, the college offense is very much like system oriented. Like, they're all kind of the same. Like, nobody really runs an NBA style offense. And over there, it's totally different.
Yeah, and you're playing against grown men, right? You know, so it's definitely a different mindset against, you know, with the players that you're playing against. It's a different physicality. You know, it's a different schedule. It's a different. There's a lot of differences that it comes to becoming, you know, from a pro. I don't know a ton about the European pro game, you know, just having any understanding of professional basketball and knowing what the differences are compared to, you know, what you see from the NCAA. It's not that difficult to see the difference. Right. So, you know, I mean, yeah, these are all at least reasons why you can see Sekou jump in and look so comfortable. And I mean, his first three games, it was the first start was, I don't necessarily know if I have my timeline right, but it was, I want to say, he went matched up against Kawhi, LeBron, Draymond Green and Kevin Love in his first four starts so far in the NBA. And two of those are wins. So, you know, I mean, it's good to see and definitely something that I'm glad. You know, I'm not necessarily there where it's like, you know, I want to buy the stock too. And I'm, you know, definitely pulling out the credit card. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we start to see at least some lapses in his game. But, you know, there's definitely so much there to build off of that I do feel like Detroit might have actually found their franchise cornerstone in this draft. And that is exciting.
Literally just fell in their lap. He was the best player available at 15. I was genuinely surprised. Like, on my personal board during the draft, I had him like top 10.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people did too. Yeah. It sounded like that's where he was going to go, but you know, it was one of those situations where you know, he just starts to fall, and then Detroit was smart enough to actually select him. So definitely, I mean, Sekou is going to be the number one reason to tune into Pistons basketball right now. And then obviously once Luke gets back and to see how those guys, you were saying it earlier, Sham, if, you know, you can, if Detroit can be competitive, remain competitive, and you're riding out the young guys, great. And that's definitely something that Detroit can be excited about, where we haven't had that opportunity with how they've, you know, gone about constructing their team.
Right.
But this is an opportunity now where you can be like, okay, there's actually some real solid young players on this team. Bruce Brown, Christian Wood, Sekou, Luke Kennard. Like, let's see what these guys can do. And maybe we, you know, can retool and see what we're, you know, with a healthy Blake Griffin, all that type of stuff next year. But I did want to change topics here. And that, you know, I think letting the young guys shine, there's definitely an opportunity for even more playing time for some of these guys, you know, depending on what happens with the Andre Drummond situation. It does sound like, you know, via the beat writers, via everything we're hearing from, you know, Detroit, so from the Pistons so far, is that he's going to be traded in the next month. I guess question for you, Shamik, do you want the Pistons to trade Andre Drummond, or could you see him a part of that sort of core moving forward?
I've gone kind of back and forth on this. Like, if I think the issue doesn't really come with me wanting him here. Of course I'd want him here. Like, who wouldn't want him here? He's been awesome here. I think the issue really comes with how much is he going to be commanding this summer or next summer if he opts in. Is he going to be in the $30 million range? Then I would say, like, you know, it's probably time to probably let him walk. And I think that's what the Pistons are kind of realizing. Like, he's going to be – they're kind of be – he's going to be too expensive for them. Not that they can't afford him, but, like, given the timeline of the team and the way the team is constructed, like, is paying Andre Drummond $30 million going to be prudent and wise, especially when you have Blake Griffin for another 2-3 years? It's – I don't know. I don't think it is. But if Andre Drummond can be had for, like, $25 million and under, which I really doubt – he could be, go for it. Like, definitely re-sign him. But I think the fact that they're already shopping him means that they probably realize that he's going to be, you know, too expensive. So, of course, I'd want him, but I don't think it's in the cards, like, financially. But I think also, like, Andre Drummond is already, what, 26, 27, 26?
He's 26.
26. And say Sekou is the... If we're assuming Sekou is going to be the heart and soul of this team when he hits his prime, and let's say he hits his prime in the 24-25, that's 6 years from now. If Andre Drummond is going to be paired with Sekou 6 years from now, that's putting Andre Drummond at 32. Are we expecting Andre Drummond at 32 to be a consistent to be as good as he is now?
No.
And with that said, is he going to be worth $30 million at that age?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think your question's definitely, you know, especially if that's where your mindset is, if it's like, okay, Sekou's going to be the guy, yeah, we really have to go with the youth movement. You know, Andre Drummond's time, I mean, especially with Sekou being as young as he is compared to other young players, then yeah, you know, I don't necessarily see how those timelines work out. You know, and I don't necessarily see Andre Drummond being a Piston for the rest of his career, no matter what happens, right, you know, within this next month. Right. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it's unfortunate that it's kind of come to this season. You know, I was really hoping that we would see, you know, Andre, play out the rest of it, the contract that he has. I wasn't necessarily thinking that he was going to opt out, but there's not a ton of free agents that are going to be making a lot of money this offseason.
He'd be the number one free agent if he opted out.
Yeah, I mean, there's Fred VanVleet's going to be definitely wanted, but Andre Drummond's, you know, two-time All-Star, so yeah, I'm it's a little, it will be very weird to see him in a new uniform. Agreed. Like, something that's like, okay, you're kind of preparing yourself for it, but you're also not, like, I'm not necessarily, like, emotionally ready to say bye to Andre, especially with how tumultuous it's been with him, yeah, here. But not due to him, just, you know, just, yeah, how things are kind of
literally everything around
out
him has, like, been tumultuous except for him.
Yeah,
he's,
yeah,
been
exactly
consistent. He's been awesome. Like, there's no complaints I have about him.
So let's just, yeah. So I think it is good just to kind of put out there that 95% of, we're 95% certain that he's going to be moved. The teams that I've heard that are reportedly interested are the Atlanta Hawks, the Boston Celtics, Charlotte, the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dallas, who we heard about, you know, probably about a month ago or so by now, and Toronto. Shamik, this is, I'm not asking you what is, like, you know, to tell me players and, you know, what a trade looks like, but what is a reasonable turn for Andre, knowing that he can walk at the end of the year? Like, would that just be salary filler and, like, a middling first round pick, like a lottery protected first round pick? Would you want, like, the salary filler, which you're going to need, like a possible developmental player and a pick? Like, what are you sort of looking at for a blueprint to get for Andre Drummond?
I think at minimum you need expiring equivalent salary, and one of a middling first round pick, like, you know, like, I think for the Atlanta deal that was discussed is like a 2020 Brooklyn pick. That's probably going to be middle of the road. Maybe late lottery, maybe not. Like, who knows? That's probably reasonable. Or the expiring salary and a developmental player under the age of 23.
Okay. Would you see a scenario of one of those teams where they would give up. And this is kind of me sort of harkening back. I listened to Laz's podcast recently where he had Jeff Siegel on from Peachtree Hoops. And he mentioned that the top that he'd want to offer for Atlanta to offer would be to give in the Brooklyn 2020 pick, which is lottery protected. So Brooklyn would have to make the playoffs for that to convey this year. And Chandler Parsons. So you are getting, you know, the expiring money. You are getting, you know, the future pick, the pick this year, first round. And that's really all because he was definitely a little bit more cautious, just knowing that Andre Drummond, that might be a first round pick for a 3 month rental of Andre right. Drummond, which is, you know, that'd be disastrous.
Exactly.
So I guess, and it sounded like Laz was kind of more so on the team that's like, okay, but could we also get a developmental player as well, like a Cam Reddish, a DeAndre Hunter? It sounded like Jeff was like, you know, definitely wanted to sort of back off away from that, and I don't blame him. Do you think that there's any sort of any situation, any scenario out there where Detroit could actually find themselves a young player and a pick, and you know, you might be signing up for more long-term money, but at the same time, you would be getting essentially two cracks at the bat, you know, with you know, a young player and a pick.
I could see that happening with only contending teams. I feel like teams like Atlanta, Cleveland, even Dallas, like to an extent, that's a relatively young team. Like, I think these teams are less likely to give up more than one future asset in the case of either like a player or a pick. I think they're less likely to do so than like a team that's a Boston, for example, like is willing to give up like some salary equivalent, maybe a pick, maybe some other like young player that doesn't really see the floor, have much rotation value right now. I could see that happening more with contending teams, but at the same time, I look at it from their perspective and I'm like, okay, Andre Drummond could walk in 3 months. Is it worth me giving up this much for 3 months of his work, and then for him to opt out and then sign with my competitor? It's, I don't know. For that reason, like even before the trade circles kind of like started swirling, like what last week, the week before, I was very pessimistic as to if the Pistons are even able to move Andre Drummond for a proper value. Like before the Atlanta thing kind of came up, I was expecting like expirings in like a second, but for that reason, like because he could just,
because you don't know what he's going,
yeah, he
to
could
do
be
at
gone
the end of the year.
And then Atlanta now in, you know, like a bad team is now stuck without a future asset and without Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
So then
I
what,
think with the
right?
Yeah, no, I think it would definitely be a bad look for their leadership there. I think with, there's a reason why Atlanta makes probably the most sense for this team. I mean, Charlotte does make some sense as well. Is because, you know, you are showing to Trae Young in the Atlanta situation that you're serious about possibly, you know, about winning and making winning moves and not just being stuck, you know, bad for the next 3 or 4 years. And, you know, if you have to give up a pick or a young player to do that, then I think that would make sense because, you know, you are getting Andre Drummond. He is a little bit older, but at the same time, he is still only 26. You know,
right.
I mean, you're still going to have him. And especially if you can re-sign him this summer, then that would be your pairing alongside John Collins. That would be your young-ish core. And that's not a bad core to sort of go off of.
And they just drafted a center too. Like they just drafted a center that's supposed to be like, he's not close to being a good player yet, but in what's that guy, Bruno Fernandes?
Yeah, Bruno
yeah,
Fernando.
Like
yeah,
he's not ready to be like a guy who can step in and like be Trae Young's lob threat or like a pick and roll threat just yet. But maybe by the end of Andre Drummond's next contract, he could possibly be that. So that transition would be easier.
Okay, let's. How about this? Let me run through some hypothetical trades here, and I would love to, you know, get a yes or a no, or you know, you can kind of speculate from there.
All right.
So let's say the Mavericks. This is the first one that we heard about, you know, going back about a month ago now. The what was reported would be Dwight Powell or Maxi Kleber, one of their big men, and Tim Hardaway Jr. for Andre Drummond. Would that be a move that you'd be willing to part with Andre for?
I would want some sort of pick in return. It can even be like a future pick or like a heavily protected pick, but I would want some additional future asset in that. And also I'd rather have, I think the scenario you just pointed out was Tim Hardaway Jr. or Maxi Kleber, Tim Hardaway Jr. and one of Maxi Kleber or, Dwight Powell. Exactly. I would rather have Maxi Kleber and with Tim Hardaway Jr. and potentially some sort of future asset with that. I'd be cool with that. And I think Dallas is one of those teams that like is a dark horse because they're trying to like Luka is really good right now and he's on a rookie scale contract. I think this is like the time right now to like be super competitive.
Yeah, they're you know, I was just looking at them, watching them play yesterday. I think they were, you know, two games back in like the loss column. But still they were six in the West, but they were, you know, two or three games back from the second seed. So, they're right there. And, you know, they have Kristaps and I think that timeline would make some sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'd be willing to do all of that, but at the same time, who knows, you know, Andre Drummond could be a guy that they like. It could be something where, you know, they've been wanting to sign a center for quite some time of his capacity. Right. So I could see Andre wanting to stay there and wanting to, you know, play with Luka and play with Kristaps. I wouldn't blame him at all.
And they may be desperate for that. The reason of, you know, Luka's on his rookie scale deal. We need to put a talent around him.
Spend the money now. No, I definitely understand. Here's another one that kind of came up already, but Atlanta. So would they be willing to give Cam Reddish or DeAndre Hunter in a trade along with that Brooklyn pick and Chandler Parsons?
I doubt.
Or would you just... Okay.
I doubt it. I doubt that too. But if they could... I mean, if they could get one of those two guys out of it, then sure. I mean, why not?
What if there was just Cam Reddish and Chandler Parsons for Andre Drummond?
I really don't like Cam Reddish.
Okay. What if it was DeAndre Hunter and Chandler Parsons?
I would be more inclined to accept that deal. But now you're getting overlapping... Like, DeAndre Hunter plays the same position as Sekou, right? I would be unwilling to kind of push aside Sekou's rotation minutes for DeAndre Hunter, and I don't think they can play together.
Okay. So you're really, if you're making a trade with the Atlanta Hawks, you're eyeing that 2020 Brooklyn pick.
I'm eyeing the 2020 Atlanta pick, but if they're not going to give me
their pick.
But if they're not going to give me that, then I'll take the 2020 Brooklyn pick.
Okay, highly, I was gonna say that Atlanta pick is gonna be pretty damn high.
That's their best future asset, not named Trae Young, right now.
Okay, yeah, I mean that would be great. I don't think they're willing to part with that pick just because they're last in the league. But here's another team that I thought was interesting was the Charlotte Hornets, who came up. They're playing surprisingly better than they expected. You know, they found their point guard in the future in Devontae Graham, who's been just outrageous this year. Terry Rozier's actually played pretty well for the most part, and they have him under contract. So maybe the time's now for them to sort of, you know, really sort of hit on, you know, start to build this thing and start to actually, you know, turn the page on the Kemba Walker franchise, essentially, and you'd see if they can actually make a push for the playoffs, especially knowing that they're right there in that sort of bunch that the Pistons are in. And they're realistic, you know, especially if they do require Andre Drummond, I would not be shocked at all if they were to make the playoffs. Would you make a trade package Andre Drummond for Bismack Biyombo and Miles Bridges?
If I were Detroit, I wouldn't accept that deal because I don't think Miles Bridges...
Because of the Sekou thing?
No, well, yeah, that, and I don't think Miles Bridges is as good of a prospect as, like, say, their pick would be.
Okay. So if it was just expiring money, assuming... What if it was, you know, you're picking up a Nicholas Batum? Because if you do pick up Nicholas Batum, you're still going to have to pay him $27 million next year.
I'm okay with that.
Would that be worth it? Okay.
If you get the pick out of it. But just like as an aside, if you're a Charlotte fan and you trade for Andre Drummond, yeah, you'd be excited to have him. But man, wouldn't you wish that would have happened a year earlier?
I mean, both Charlotte and the Pistons had wanted the Kemba Walker, Andre Drummond pairing.
They would have been awesome together.
They would have been awesome. So in your mind, you're more interested in getting Charlotte's pick out of them compared to a Miles Bridges or a Malik Monk.
Correct. Now, if they're willing to throw in P.J. Washington, I would be willing to have him over the pick. But I'm not very high on Miles Bridges, and I'm certainly not high on Malik Monk.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see, because I do think that they are essentially an Andre Drummond away from really – I think they could make the playoffs if they do acquire him. So then if you are even getting their pick, then it is going to be something that's outside of the lottery this year, which might not be a bad thing. You know, Detroit found Siku last year, so who knows.
Right.
One of the more interesting teams that I saw that was linked to this trade was the Boston Celtics. And I looked over their roster, and I was looking at their money situation to see what the Pistons could actually do. And I don't know what it even looks like. Unless they're looking to part with Gordon Hayward, or if they were looking to move Marcus Smart, who has 2 years left on his deal, and Daniel Tice for Drummond. That just seems really high for a team that's playing so well. And they do need a center. They need a real center. I don't think Enes Kanter is really what they see as being the, you know, and they do have Kemba Walker. So it could actually be a situation where you actually get Kemba Walker and Andre Drummond on the same team. And if you're able to keep Gordon Hayward, is that team good enough to really contend in the Eastern Conference, knowing that you're getting rid of like a, you know, lunch pail sort of the DNA of the team in Marcus Smart? I don't know. That it's just strange to see because their money situation is so unique.
Yeah, I really don't see how it works out for them for that reason. And also, like, they're third right now, two games away from being second. Do they really need him? Like, sure, like, they're not gonna, like, they're not as good as Milwaukee is right now, but how many teams are as good as Milwaukee is? Like, if they add Andre Drummond and they take away Hayward or Smart, they could arguably be worse than what they are now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be Hayward or Smart. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could, either or, if you take one of them away and you put Andre Drummond in his place, I'm not a believer in that team with Andre Drummond now.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would be, I don't know.
I'd love to have Smart in Detroit, though.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to have, that's what I was thinking. Like, if that would be possible to nab Marcus Smart, knowing that he has two more years left on his deal, knowing the kind of player that he is, and you know, the type of example he could set for the guys that are on that team right now, I think he'd be perfect. It's just hard to see them moving on from a guy like that, just knowing how important he is to sort of like the culture there. But who knows, man? I mean, a team that is consistent of, you know, if you have Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker, Andre Drummond, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, that's a really, really good team. Like, that really could possibly contend in the Eastern Conference. I don't know. It does seem like it could possibly knock off the bat. I'm not going to lie.
Possibly, but it's not like it's like a definite, you know? And I think that's enough. Like, that hesitation is enough for them not to do it.
Yeah, and they're good. They're good right now. They're third in the East. They're playing better than people expected.
Right. And I think continuity is key with those teams that are at the top. Like, you don't want to make a move when you're a top three team right now.
But also, if you do look back on even, like, the Detroit Pistons when they won their championship, they were a really good team. They had been a really good team. They had made the playoffs a bunch of years in a row, and they took a pretty big risk in moving on from but acquiring Rasheed Wallace. And that was, you know, what pushed them in the direction to win the championship that year. So I think Danny Ainge knows that they're not a championship team right now. And maybe he thinks if they do acquire one more, you know, all-star quality type of player, that could push them over the edge. I don't know. It's interesting to see, but I would really like to see what Andre Drummond would look like on that team, hoping that Detroit could get, you know, some valuable assets in return.
Right. I definitely don't think he would re-sign there.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I think he would. I think he wants to change the narrative, and if he wants to be on a winning team, I could see him wanting to build it with Trae Young. I think he would definitely like that situation. I could definitely see him wanting to stay in Dallas, just knowing that he's playing alongside Luka and Kristaps. And if you're going to be winning as many games as you are in Boston, he went to Connecticut. He's from New York. Like, he's from the Northeast-ish area. I could see him wanting to stay there.
Fair. I don't know. I just don't see, like, I don't know. I feel like Boston is one of those places that free agents, like, they go there, they don't really enjoy their time there, and they leave. Like, Kyrie is an example of that. Ray Allen's an example of that. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like Andre Drummond would just be another version of that.
It'll be interesting. The Andre Drummond situation for this next month is going to be very interesting in Detroit. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens this summer with him, because we know how highly we valued right. him. It will be very, very telling and interesting to see what the actual league does with this sort of situation coming up. But Shamik, I don't have anything else. You know, we hit it. We talked some Blake, talked some Siku, and talked a lot of Andre. Do you have anything that you wanted to drop or to you know, leave on when it comes to this app?
Well, let me ask you, Portland. Do you see Portland being a possible Andre destination?
Portland, I could see him fitting in there. I don't know what they would do with the I'm blanking on his name, the Bosnian Nurk. Beast. What the Nurk situation would be like. Would he be in the trade to Detroit? Would that be
no?
You know, so I haven't looked at their roster, or their money situation.
So I don't know when Nurk is supposed to come back, but right now the Blazers are like what, ninth in the West, and it's looking more and more like they're going to be on the outside looking in. With, you know, OKC is like that. That's a really surprising team to me. OKC is surging, and pretty much the top seven teams in the conference are set. But now Portland is like on the outside looking in with the other teams trying to get that eight seed. So say they make a move for some expirings, Zach Collins, maybe a second or something like that for Andre.
I do like Zach Collins.
I do like Zach Collins too.
And also one of the names that was coming up back when the Blake talk was happening with Portland was Anthony Simons.
Ooh, if we can get him, oh. Man,
yeah, he kind of might be like in that Siku type of category. Like, he's played too well already, they're not moving him. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'd be okay with helping out the Portland Trailblazers. They're kind of my like de facto Western Conference team. And Zach Collins, you know, I think he's really good and he could be that center of the future. So I mean, I would definitely be down if they could make that work. And yeah, you know, kind of rolling it out and seeing what they have with the young guys.
And Damian Lillard would be like by far the best point guard Andre Drummond will have ever played with. Actually, that can be said about any of these destinations, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that we've all wanted to see him with Kemba. I think that's just because it was seemed very realistic that could possibly happen at some point. But, you know, if Andre Drummond, if we were more geographically located next to, you know, Portland, we might have been having those types of conversations, right. Those types of dreams of getting those two guys together. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be an excellent pairing. And also, he's not a guy like Nurk where you have to disrupt what it is that you're doing and let him sort of get his own. Andre Drummond is someone that can, you know, fit easily within the offense there and probably be the type of player that we wanted him to be in Detroit for so long. That sort of like pick and roll, dump it to you when you're down there type of guy, go get some boards, but that's it. And I think he'd be okay with that role.
Yeah. And like, because like, they're not sure like when Nurk's coming back and the team is like sliding in the wrong direction, maybe they'll be desperate enough to do a deal like this to try and push themselves back up into the playoffs.
Yeah, they're definitely one of those teams that you know, people are waiting for them to make a move one way or the other. And a lots of times what that conversation has come down to, it's like, okay, well, when are you going to trade away CJ McCollum and really try to build this thing around Dame? Maybe they just double down and say, hey, we're not doing that. We're just going to bring in Andre Drummond and see what we can do from here.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Food for thought.
No, good stuff.
Food for thought.
No. Yeah, I mean, we'll see, man. It's going to be interesting. Whatever happens, I feel like something's going to happen. So I already have my Woj and my Shams.
You should have had it on already. You shouldn't have just had to put it on. You should have always had it on.
It's kind of annoying right now, honestly. Just because a lot of retweets going on.
Yeah, it's like, oh, check out my Woj pod. I don't care, Woj.
There was like an NFL one that came on. And I was like, I do not care. Like an Adrian Wojnarowski like Adam, retweet from an NFL.
Yeah, like Adam Schefter or something. Yeah.
So Shamik, tell the people where they can find you, and let's wrap this bad boy up.
Yeah, so you can find my writing at DetroitBadBoys.com. I write kind of on a special basis. I feel like I'm not like a consistent contributor, but if I have some thought that's been brewing for a while, I'll throw it on paper and let you guys read it. But you can find my podcast, Two Guys and a Goose, on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Check it out. It's not as serious as this Inside the Cylinder one, but give you a little comedic relief in your day. So, yeah, check it out. And, hey, thanks for having me, man. And this is fun.
What about Twitter? Where are you at?
Oh, at ShamShamGod. Must follow.
Hit him up, guys. You probably already follow him. Probably. So, but, yeah, as you know, you can find this episode, Detroit Bad Boys. This is David Fernandez, and we will catch you sometime soon. Peace.